I apologize for the change in the title. It was a misunderstanding. I'll be talking about in vivo regeneration strategies. The hourglass. So we have at the top of this hourglass what we all know, in vivo niches, which are the place where the blastocysts start to develop and give rise during normal development to all our cells and tissues. And what we, you, me, everyone more or less here is trying to do is try to replicate that in a petri dish. And you put these cells or reprogram the cells in a petri dish and then try to obtain your neuron, your cardiomyocyte, your hepatocyte, etc. Even in the last year, we have been able to obtain mini structures like a mini brain, a mini kidney, a mini eye. And all this is normally by trial and error. And the idea of the hourglass is that with time, probably, we will get that these cells here at the bottom, they more or less resemble the cells that the embryo normally does every day. The major question that we have now is whether what we are doing at the bottom of this hourglass is functional, if these cells are mature, if they are really like the one that are at the top of the hourglass. And as I said, this is a matter of time, and I am confident that with time, most of these cells will be functional. But one can come with other approaches until this happens. And this is what I'm going to tell you, a couple of approaches that we are trying to do in the lab. In vivo regeneration and in vivo differentiation. There are animals that can regenerate very easily. The axolotl, the zebrafish, the newt. And here there is an example of this. If you cut the limb of the axolotl, it will grow back in approximately 3 or 4 weeks. It will look like the one that you cut. It will be the same size, the same pattern, etc. So how does this happen? We have been trying to understand this process, and one example is the heart of the zebrafish. Like the limb of the axolotl, it can regenerate. After you amputate, in about a month, you have the heart back. Epigenetics plays an important role. I'm going to give you just one example, microRNAs. So normally if you cut the heart of the zebrafish, it will regenerate. However, if you do something similar into a mammal heart, you will get a fibrotic tissue. We have now an idea that of how this takes place in the zebrafish. And these two microRNAs are important for having this result or this result. And perhaps the best proof of that is that if we take a mouse that normally will not regenerate the heart and downplay the activity, downregulate the activity of these microRNAs, what you see is that compared to the control after you have done an infarct in the mouse and you have applied this anti-mir treatment, that there is regeneration in these mice. The idea that we currently have is that what happened, and we have shown that clearly in the zebrafish and as well as in the mouse, is that you have a mature cardiomyocyte that is not able to proliferate, and after this treatment, it goes back to a dedifferentiated state where it's able to proliferate again. And then the regeneration process ensues. So this is a little bit of an irony here. We are in front of a stem cell audience, and these animals do not use stem cells at all to regenerate. And this is something that when we try to apply our procedures in generating stem cells in the lab, we should take into account. And that's the main point I want to drive here today, that natural regeneration doesn't use stem cells. You just differentiate cells too, because this happens not only in the heart, in the kidney, and in other structures. And the second part of the talk is in vivo differentiation. So during normal development, at different stages, you have these niches, the totipotent niche that will give the conditions for the cells to give rise to every cell in our bodies, the blastocyst niche, the epiblast niche, the organ tissue niche. And you can alter in the lab these niches. You can genetically empty a niche. For instance, the PDX gene is a key gene for making a pancreas. So if you alter the expression of this gene, you eliminate the formation of a pancreas. Now you can fill back that niche again, and you can do that. One way to do this is to use cells. Cells, pluripotent cells, that when introduced into the animal will restore that empty niche that you have created in the lab. And then you can get back the pancreas. So these experiments have been done, and this, the proof of concept is these two papers here, where you basically take blastocyst, eliminate the PDX1 gene, and then you complement that blastocyst with rat cells, and what you obtain is a mouse that has a rat pancreas. Now, with the gene editing technologies that we have, we see in the last, even every day, in the last few weeks, in the last month that are happening in front of us, this experiment can be done rather quickly. So you take, and here is the proof of concept, using the Cas9 technology with the guide RNA for PDX1, you eliminate that from the mice. You take rat cells that you have previously labeled then, introduce then in a host mother. Here you have the chimera, and when you look at the pancreas in red, which is the red cells from the rat, the pancreas is totally composed of rat cells. Here is better seen. You have, besides other tissues, you see that the pancreas is mainly coming from the rat. Now, what we are doing in the lab is, with the knowledge that we have in the field of developmental biology, try to see what are the key genes to produce some of the organs that you have here in the slide. And for instance, another example, heart. So if you eliminate this particular gene, that's the phenotype you will have. An embryo that it will not develop will not form the heart. But if you compensate or complement this with rat cells, you see that the animals will then be alive. And then you will have different type of phenotypes depending on the proportion of the chimerism, the number of rat cells that get integrated in the heart. And you can see at the bottom, at the top of the slide, the different sizes of the embryos rescued by these rat cells. The gene editing technologies that I mentioned before allow you to go rather quick in this list. And these are some of the examples we are targeting with the Cas9 technology for the different organs. And the question is not just to do this between the mouse and the rat because of an intellectual curiosity. The idea is try to get human tissues, organs, or cells. And we thought that the pig could be a good host. Now, the pig is very different from a human. You don't need to see the picture. But some of you will be impressed that, and this is a picture that was a diagram that was drawn by Haeckel 100 years ago that shows a pig and a human. And if I don't put the name below, you will never be able to tell me which one is what. Now, if you take a 4-week-old pig embryo and then a 6-week-old human embryo, they are practically identical. The rate of cell proliferation in the pig and in the human is very similar, and the sizes of our organs are very similar to the pig. So we have chosen the pig as a model to do these experiments. What do we need? We need to know the genes that we need to change and how to change them. I feel that the current gene editing technology solves this problem of how. We need to work on what are the key genes that we need to eliminate in the embryo, in the pig embryo. And the other key technology is the cells to use. So So to show you the first example here, genes to change and how to change them, here it goes. So you get the pig zygotes, you do the PDX Cas mRNA, and then you have the pig here. You put it in the operation table, and the operation is rather simple. This experiment were done in collaboration with the University of Davis. So you take the uterus out, and basically you make a hole in the horn of the uterus there. And now you come with your blastocyst, where you have eliminated your particular gene, the PDX gene, introduce it in that hole. Approximately an experiment takes 20 blastocysts inside the pig. And that's it, you put it in, wait 28 days, and you look what you have. And basically you have this placenta here, the embryos, look at them in detail. You have your embryo, and upon further examination, you can see that the PDX gene, that this will be the control one, the non-treated embryo, it's gone in your experiment. You have here the SOX9, which mark the surrounding tissue, so it's specific just for the one you have eliminated. And when you look at the progenitors of the pancreas, while in the wild type you clearly see this progenitor of the islet present, you don't see that present at all in the treated one. So the first step seems to work. Now, what cells do we use? It's for many years we have really pluripotent cells in the mouse and in the rat. Unfortunately, we don't have that in human. What we have in human is a different stage of cells, what is called prime cells. And basically for this experiment, what is important to know is that they are chimeric incompetent. Neither humans, neither any non-human primates, these cells are still available. So we need to generate the proper conditions to have human cells that are chimeric competent. We're working in that step. So here you have one of those conditions. In red, they are marked how when we inject them in the pig blastocyst, they incorporate nicely there. However, while this takes place, what we do have in the human is these epiblast cells, the ones that are generated in this particular niche. So what we, to demonstrate that they are chimeric competent, we have grafted, then in the mouse, and you can see here that they are able to give rise to mesoderm, endoderm, and ectoderm. So ideally, one would like to use these chimeric competent naive cells, but in the absence, we could use also cells that are going to give rise to different progenitors. Problems, and I finish with that. What genes do we use? I mentioned that at the beginning. We need to go back to our knowledge of embryology and try to better understand what are the key genes for the cell type that we are interested in. What, it's just a gene, it's a combination of different genes. Do we use early genes in the process, late gene in the process? The combination of rat and mouse is giving us a lot of answers to these questions that we are posing here. More problems. When do we inject that in the pig? At the 4-8 cell morula blastocyst stage, we have nailed it down very well in the mouse, but we don't know in the pig, so we are right now practicing on that. How many cells do we inject? So our experience in the mouse is that if we inject not that many cells, the degree of the chimeric animal we obtain is very low, and therefore we don't obtain the organ we are interested on. If we inject too many cells, then the embryos don't survive. So we more or less know how many cells we have to inject in the mouse. We need to know that in the human pig situation, and we are working in that. The This is a chimera, and it's difficult to control the process. So we can somehow alter that process by priming the donor cells, the human cells, to a specific germ layer. Or we can incorporate genes to avoid cells that we don't want to obtain, like, for instance, from an ethical point of view, having human cells in the brain of a pig. Another problem, which I don't really know if this is a problem, is zoonosis, the problem of bringing viruses into humans when we do the transplantation of these human cells. But after all, we have been living with pigs for thousands of years and eating them, and it doesn't seem that there is a problem, this concept here. And the other one is the immune rejection. Certainly, we are starting with IPS from the specific patient, but one could carry pig cells in a transplantation setting. And that's my final slide, just to summarize that while great advances and the talk of Joseph and the one coming after me from Inder will have and will indicate that the in vitro approaches towards generating specific cell types is moving forward, and it's just a matter of time. There are other approaches that we should consider. Endogenous regeneration, what we learn in these animals may be helpful to induce regeneration in mammals. And then the interspecific blastocyst complementation approach between human and pig that I have indicated. I'd like to thank the people who are involved in these two different approaches, especially Pablo Ross at the University of Davis is our expert in the pig experiment, and this has been mainly carried out by Yun Wu and all this talented group of postdocs here, and the in vivo regeneration experiment that I just briefly went through has been carried by this group of people here. We have the collaboration of Mauro Jack and Serena Sacchigna in Italy for the heart experiment of the regeneration in the mouse. And that's all. Thank you very much.